The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Between the Synapse with Mark Tobin. If you're looking to learn something useful, you've come to the wrong place. But as Belushi once said, it don't cost nothing. So let's get things started. Here's Mark Tobin.
All right, and welcome to Between the Synapse. I'm your host, Mark Tobin. Thanks for listening in. First, remember, if you'd like to listen to previous podcasts of Between the Synapse, check them out on my blog at betweenthesynapse.com. And if you haven't yet had a chance to subscribe to receive notices of future shows, please do so right there on the homepage. You can also check out various articles and other pieces of interest right there on my blog. If you have any questions or comments, you can email them to me at mbt at betweenthesynapse.com or on Twitter at betweentsynapse. And if you have any questions or comments that you would like to air live right now, give me a call at 866-472-5788. That's 866-472-5788. So before we get started, just a bit of advice to college interviewers. Tis the season, and you may not know this, but it seems that most college interviews now take place at coffee shops. In all probability, Starbucks seems to be the place. You go into any Starbucks any given day, and about this time, and you'll see, if you're looking, a professional adult with a person in the age of 17, 18 having a conversation, and in all likelihood, it could be a college interview. Well, I walked into Starbucks before the show today, as I always do, to grab my coffee. And right there, when you walk in the door and the common table, which, by the way, so first piece of advice for really anybody conducting an interview at a common location, be it a Starbucks, be it a restaurant, okay, don't sit at the common table for an interview. Whatever you need to do, get a private table, okay? That's first and foremost for any interview, but particularly for a college interview. That's number one. All right, number two, don't put out a sign that says blank interview. And if you're going to do that, don't do it right by the entrance of the given establishment, in this case, a Starbucks. So I walk in the door, and I see the sign. It's a folded over piece of paper, and I guess I'll say the school. It says Stanford interview. I don't know if it was trying to be impressive. I don't think so, because it was sort of a handwritten sign. I think it was more just so that the person could find them. But as the interview started and continued, they left the sign up. So these two people were sitting at the common table at Starbucks with a sign in front of them that said Stanford interview. So anybody that walked in could see that these two people were engaging in a college interview for Stanford, kind of like we were watching a reality TV show. So my advice to college interviewers, please, if you're doing a public location, number one, get a private table. Two, don't advertise it. And three, just show a little discretion while you're doing it. I think you'll probably have a better interview and just be a little less awkward. All right, now moving on. Big issues of the day. They're really two this week. One, I guess by comparison's sake, is relatively superficial. The other, well, probably kind of superficial as well, but of greater import. Let's talk about the Super Bowl first, or as some are calling it, the Hate Bowl, and kind of similar, actually, to the other issue we're going to spend some time talking about, which is politics. It's kind of like a lot of the elections that we end up having, where everybody says, you know, I don't like either candidate, and I don't, you know, I want to vote for neither. Well, that's what we have now in this Super Bowl, which is really unusual. You know, obviously you've got fans of both, people in Seattle, and you've got, you know, people in New England. And you've got a smattering of fans, you know, around the country, certainly, more so, you know, probably for New England, as people from Boston have sought warmer climates. But, you know, these are two teams that, you know, kind of people love to hate for different reasons. And so thus the name, the Hate Bowl. I mean, if people were to vote, take polls, you know, they want to vote for neither. You know, if Green Bay had not figured out just numerous ways to throw that game away, Green Bay would be the overwhelming favorite of, you know, quote, the people, the people's favorite here to win the game. And so here we have a game that people are not sure who to root against. And that has now become more difficult with this this recent scandal, which has taken on the name of Deflategate. If you haven't been paying attention, Deflategate is the issue of deflating footballs, which make it easier for the quarterback to throw the football, particularly in inclement weather, which was a situation last Sunday in the game between Indianapolis Colts and New England. Now, I don't think anybody, including the Colts, are saying that it would have changed the outcome of the game had 10 of the 11 footballs not been outside the appropriate spectrum that the NFL sets for the inflation rate of the footballs. New England ran roughshod over the Colts, so it was 37-7, something like that. And if they played that game, you know, with, quote, regulation footballs on any given Sunday, at this point, I don't think there's going to be any difference in the outcome. The Colts aren't just, you know, ready at this point. That being said, there seems to be some indication that it was also the issue in the week before in the game against Baltimore, which was a very, very close game and came down to the very end on an interception by Joe Flacco. So we have now this great big cloud hanging over the biggest day of the sports year in our country. The biggest day in the NFL, which is the biggest league in the world, soccer, but they'll try to do anything they can to move on from this in order to make Super Bowl Sunday what they want it to be, which is a celebration of the sport, a national holiday, unofficial, but it has become that. And how do they do that? How do they remove the stink of quote, a cheating team potentially winning the Super Bowl and having that hang over a team? And quite frankly, I can't recall this ever being an issue for a Super Bowl contending team. Some people say that, well, you know, this happens all the time. They're always doctoring footballs. They're always trying to make the football, you know, more customizable for the quarterback and to fit whatever the quarterback likes. And I have no doubt that that's true. My guess is that there is some level of acceptable customizing that quarterbacks either do or have done to the football that everybody says, okay, that's fine. But what it appears is that they have taken that much, much further than is generally accepted. And so this concept that, well, everybody cheats, maybe, and once again, I don't know, not having been there, but maybe it's, well, everybody cheats a little, but not everybody cheats a lot, and they don't do it in a coordinated manner to the extent that 10 of 11 balls are doctored. And that seems to be the concern in this case, to where, some of the balls may typically just be, rubbed or something like that a little bit to make it more comfortable. Here you have a systematic alteration of the balls, which make them 20% lighter, less air, and more grippable. Bill Belichick, in his conference, I think it was this morning, said, I have no explanation for what happened. And when asked, he also said, he has no explanation for Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 and why Jerry Lewis is considered so funny in France. Nothing unexpected from his side. Though it is certainly plausible that the coach would not be focusing on who's taking care of the footballs, and that would certainly fall on those closer to the footballs, and you can fill in the blank as to who that would be. We're going to take a break, and when we get back, I want to talk about scandals in general and how they get named. Because I'm kind of getting tired of this gate thing, and I have some suggestions on some other names for this thing. So but we're going to take a break, and when we get back, we'll cover that. So stick around on Between the Synapses.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Ah, a nice glass of wine is very refreshing after the end of a long day. But have you ever considered the story behind the wine? Tune in to Bacchus and Beery Wine Radio with your hosts, Roger and Donna Beery. You'll meet some of the people behind the world's wineries, travel the wine country, and learn more about that glass that you're enjoying. Roger and Donna will also give would-be vintners a behind-the-scenes look at starting a winery. Bacchus and Beery Wine Radio airs live every Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Variety. What can you find on Get Real Radio? Well, quite honestly, who you really are. Join host James Robinson each week for a program designed to reveal more about yourself and your world through words of wisdom and profound guests. You'll discover more about the spiritual movement and how it can work with you and alert you to problems you may not be aware of. It will educate, titillate, and enlighten your mind. Get Real Radio is broadcast live every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. This could end up being the best time of your week.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one Internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Between the Synapse with your host, Mark Tobin. If you want in on this week's discussion, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. 472-5788. You may also send an email to mbt@betweenthesynapse.com or on Twitter at BetweenTSynapse. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back to Between the Synapse. I'm Mark Tobin, and I'm hosting the show as I do every week. And hopefully you are listening as you do every week, or even more so than that, because you can with modern technology and podcasts, and you can download to your heart's delight. Just go to BetweenTheSynapse.com, and right there on the homepage, you can just download and listen like all the time if you want. So thanks for doing so. All right, so we're talking about Deflategate, and by the way, you know, one of the things that I found really, really annoying, you know, Bill Belichick, you know, of course, the hooded genius that people say is. And by the way, look, you know, he is a great coach. There's no denying that he is a great football coach. He is, and from what, you know, people that really know him talk about him, he is, you know, a kind of a decent guy. I mean, probably a good guy to actually have a beer with or something like that, you know, when he finally kind of relaxes. Probably, you know, pretty interesting to talk to if he actually talked and just didn't sit there. Or, you know, I don't know, maybe he's the guy that just sort of sits at the end of the bar, you know, with his hood on, kind of sipping his beer, you know, kind of grunts a little bit, maybe overhears conversation, maybe laughs like occasionally at something he thinks funny, but, you know, just sort of just sits there sipping, listening, you know, grunting. I don't know. Maybe he wouldn't be a good guy to have a beer. I don't think I'll ever have that opportunity, but be that as it may, so this thing starts popping up about that there may be an issue with the footballs, and a lot of commentators start saying, "Well, you know what? This is Belichick just trying to distract everybody from talking about what the Patriots will be doing in the Super Bowl." And I'm like, what the? Because who are they talking about distracting? They're talking about distracting like me and other, you know, and people in the media and you and whatever. But do you think they're distracting Richard Sherman? And do you think they're distracting, you know, the other Seattle Seahawks and their coach and whatever? Because instead of game planning for the Super Bowl and doing all the preparation that they did last year to win the Super Bowl, they are glued to, you know, sports talk radio and ESPN and trying to get to the bottom of this Deflategate. Damn it! You know, we cannot prepare for the Super Bowl until we know for a fact, what happened? And so, yes, that's Belichick's plan. The genius, he has figured out how to beat Seattle by distracting them from preparing for the Super Bowl by, you know, getting them so focused and so concerned about whether the footballs are going to be deflated or not that they just won't properly prepare. So, you know, it was like the silliest thing I'd heard in a long time. People who were those are the people that are like, oh yeah, like, you know, I'm so smart, I got this figured out. There's nothing to see here, folks. It's just the Belichick genius. So move on. I got this. You know, kind of a thing. So listen, before the break, talked about the naming of scandals. Everything now. There may be a couple things. I just can't think of them off the top of my head. Gets a gate after it. I don't know if anything ever has a gate in front of it. I'd have to think about that one. But usually it's everything's got the gate after it now. And so Deflategate. Well, first of all, what do footballs have to do with gate? Nothing. There's no gate in football. I mean, I don't know if there's even a kind of a lineup or a play. Maybe there is a play where they you form a gate. I don't know. But that would be about the closest thing. So I looked up some scandals, political scandals, going all the way back to, you know, our country's founding. And I found two that I think are more applicable to the situation. And, you know, please feel free to use these when talking about this deflated football issue. The first is Deflate Dome. Deflate Dome. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with U.S. history, and if you're not, damn it, you should be. Teapot Dome scandal is under Warren G. Harding's administration. And Deflate Dome, why dome? First of all, it gets a little bit into the shape of the football. And a lot of football games are played in a dome, including this Super Bowl, which is being played in Arizona in a domed stadium. All right, so you get that, right? So Deflate Dome. Deflate Dome, all right? Now, the second one is Deflate Ring, all right? Ring, if you win the Super Bowl, you get a ring. If you don't win the Super Bowl, you don't get a ring, right? Or if you get disqualified, then you absolutely don't get a ring. You're deflated. So, Deflate Ring. Now, this one, if you didn't get off the top of your head, I would understand because I thought this was something else. It's the Whiskey Ring scandal under the administration of Ulysses S. Grant. I actually just thought it was referring to his, his personal problems. But it actually was involving a bunch of other stuff and just overall corruption in his administration, which may have been the result of, you know, his personal habits. But nonetheless, Deflate Ring. So give it a shot when you're talking to people. Instead of saying Deflate Gate, say, you know, throw it around. Deflate Dome, Deflate Ring, whatever you want, see which sticks, and we'll see where this goes. So that's my suggestion. But, you know, look, if we don't, as a society, start to change how we refer to these scandals, we are forever, forever going to be stuck with this gate thing. And is it the biggest deal in the world? No, no. I'm just saying that at least have a name or title that has a little bit of relevance to the actual scandal. And, you know, I don't know if, you know, the only person that I could think that might have ever stayed at the, you know, Watergate would be, you know, the owner of the Patriots, Kraft, maybe one time. I don't think that to me is pretty tenuous if he did to call the scandal with a gate. And I'm pretty safe to say that I don't think that Kraft himself was involved in deflating the balls. And I would even be safe to say that I don't think that he would have knowledge. I don't think that's something that the owner of the team would have knowledge of. Now, you know, could he, if he knew or was aware, you know, would he have done something about it? I don't know. I don't know. That's another question. We'll have to find out about that. So, you know, I mentioned that Belichick, for whatever you think of him, whether you want to have a beer with him or not, is clearly, you know, one of the best football coaches, you know, we've ever seen. That's undeniable. And, you know, whether he's gone beyond what is appropriate by the rules, he has, whether he does that all the time, you know, don't know, but he certainly has. He certainly pushes up against the rules all the time, and uses the rule book to the full extent, like no other coach in football. There's really only one other coach at present in any of the four major sports in this country that is kind of in his sphere right now, and that would be Greg Popovich of the San Antonio Spurs. And not just saying that because I'm a big Spurs fan, as people have been listening to the show know, but the comparisons are apt in terms of being the longest tenured coaches in their respective sports. Pop has gone to 6 NBA Finals. This is a 6 Super Bowl for Belichick. In terms of the longevity between Belichick and Brady, with Popovich and Duncan, it goes on and on and on. The ability for these coaches to take castaways to find low draft picks and find viable, meaningful roles for them on the team. Because of the success of these, two teams, they're always, drafting at the end, and they're always, have salary cap issues and so forth, yet they still find ways to be competitive year in and year out, where, these other teams just don't, manage to do that. It's just getting the most. Both of these guys are able to get the most out of whatever they have and, fit guys in. In order to make both teams better and competitive year in and year out, Spurs obviously have been in the playoffs every year since Tim Duncan arrived, and Popovich has been the coach. And I think the Patriots have been the same. I think they missed the 1 year that Brady was hurt, yet they were still 10-6 with a backup quarterback. So. As I said, the comparisons are apt. I would say, however, that there are two differences. By the way, another similarity is the way they handle the press. I mean, they're both, neither of them really like to give much up to the press. But I guess this is a third difference. Is how they do it. Pop is sarcastic and sometimes surly, but mostly there is an underlying humor and to it, and it's not as mean-spirited, I would say. Whereas Belichick is sometimes just surly and sometimes mean-spirited. The humor is, I think, is lacking. There are two other differences that I want to talk about, but we're going to take a break. So when we get back, we will get to that. So stick around between the synapses.
Stimulating talk gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
It's all here in The Business of Living with host Scott Ventrella. Scott has experience as an executive coach, sought-after speaker, and lecturer. He and his guests will offer practical solutions and strategies to help you move to the next level of success, no matter where you are in your life and career. The Business of Living airs live every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
American Heroes Network is a program for and about our American veteran heroes and their families. Join host Gary Ray as he shows what is being done to help our veterans and showcase the companies and organizations that are helping our veterans and their families rebuild their lives. Listen for American Heroes Network, live and powered by the Voice America Variety Channel, every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time.
women can live their lives to the fullest and realize their dreams for growth and greatness. Georgine Summers knows. As host of On the Edge, Georgine will give you powerful tools and rules to help you change direction in your life and get rid of the fears that stop you from living your dreams. Stretch your boundaries and become the amazing person you've always wanted to be. On the Edge with Georgine Summers airs live every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
You are listening to Between the Synapse with your host, Mark Tobin. If you want in on this week's discussion, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to mvt@betweenthesynapse.com or on Twitter at @BetweenTSynapse. Now, back to the show.
All right, and welcome back to Between the Synapse with Mark Tobin. That is me. I am your host, and you're hopefully listening. So thank you for doing so. We're talking Super Bowl or Hate Bowl. Depending on your perspective. And before the break, we're talking about a comparison between Greg Popovich and Bill Belichick. And I said the one difference is a little bit of the similarity of how they handle the media, but there's the difference. And I think that Popovich does add humor into his kind of surly technique of dealing with the humor, where Belichick just kind of is just surly on to Cincinnati. The other two differences, and I touched on this earlier, is that Belichick will really push up against the rule book as far as he can and will occasionally go over it. And, you know, the one thing about, you know, Popovich is, well, you know, he holds guys out on, you know, sometimes on back-to-back nights, you know, resting players, which now, by the way, a lot of the rest of the league is starting to do because this NBA schedule has just gotten, you know, ridiculous. But by the way, I mean, that's only a competitive advantage down the road. For that particular game, it's actually a disadvantage because obviously the Spurs are then shorthanded. And so for that given game, they're not as strong. So, you know, it's actually a marketing issue as opposed to a competitive issue that you know, the NBA has issues with. So it's not, it's not a rule issue. But, you know, the way that, you know, just for example, recently with running these different lineups and putting, you know, six people on the line and doing so at the last second and, you know, without being able to notify, you know, the defense, apparently, technically, it was correct. You know, some people said, you know, I guess you could argue, was it within the spirit of the game? You know, my guess is, you know, probably not. And my guess is also you might see some rule changes because of that. You know, for the reason that before, nobody thought to do it because nobody thought it would, you know, that would be fair, that, you know, the defense wouldn't have time to, you know, basically, you know, react to what is a pretty big difference in terms of what the offense is doing when they're, you know, putting six men on the line with somebody not eligible. And so now, then the, you know, the rules committee will have to go and they'll have to revisit it and they'll have to come up with a rule that will say, well, you know, if you're going to do this, you've got to give X number of seconds notice to the defense in order to be fair. Whereas before, I guess it was something that teams just sort of did and self-enforced the fairness. And so, you know, were the Patriots cheating in doing that? No. But they were certainly pushing what I think were the elements of fair play. And now, you know, the NFL will have to deal with that. And so those are the kinds of things that that Belichick, you know, will do. And, you know, football is a different sport than basketball. I understand that. But, you know, I don't think you see those kinds of things from Popovich. And the other difference is, and it's important to restate this, basketball is different than football. I mean, there's, you know, 54-man roster versus a 15-man roster. You play a lot more games with people for, you know, a lot more time. But, you know, I was reading, and I couldn't find it, but there was a player, it was with Spurs early in his career for half a season, and he went on to have a pretty, you know, decent journeyman career, but spent about 8 years in the NBA. And he said he credits that 6 month period with the Spurs for the rest of his success, because it kind of set him on the right track of what he needed to do in order to be successful. And there are many stories about former Spurs, you know, out in the league, you know, who have said similar things, you know, under Greg Popovich. And, you know, I've never heard a player, you know, say that you know, his time with the Spurs was anything, you know, negative. That they always got something out of it, that they were always, you know, treated, you know, decently, and, you know, always felt that, you know, they were respected. And, you know, I can't say that I've heard the same publicly from people, you know, players that played under Belichick. Once again, different sports, but, you know, differences to at least point out, you know, between two of the greatest currently active coaches in four of in our four major sports. And by the way, if I'm leaving somebody out in hockey, that may be, I couldn't name a hockey coach to save my life. So I could be missing the greatest hockey coach of all time. If I am, let me know. Because I just don't follow the sport, and I can barely ice skate, so if that matters. All right, on to politics, which, as I said, is, you know, it's very similar to kind of football these days. And I think that President Obama kind of made reference to that in his State of the Union. So yes, the State of the Union address is high political theater. Nothing is solved by it. Nothing changes because of it. But it is interesting if you pay attention. And of course, the favorite part is, you know, who claps, who stands up, and who sits down. And that was never more distinct or obvious than this recent speech. You know, it's been pointed out, but... Yeah, I mean, the Republicans didn't even applaud, you know, the fact that employment is down, or that, you know, the you know, tax revenue is up, or whatever, that the sun is still shining. You know, it was just crazy. You know, nothing. You know, I think, you know, short of supporting the military, they were just glued to their seats. You know, the bottom line is that the speech was what Obama is, you know, wants to accomplish. It's his vision. It's his first points of negotiation. And, you know, there are some that saying, well, that's not how you how you start a negotiation. That's not how you start a relationship. Well, look, this is not a new relationship, and you have to go back to see where, you know, where this dialogue started. And if he had gone in there and been all, you know, nice and eager, that would have only indicated to the Republicans that he was ready to be rolled. And so I think that by taking the tact he did, it actually may help set, you know, the lines that people know where they are. And while I don't think that much is going to be accomplished in the next 2 years, there might be a couple things that they'll be able to agree on. I mean, essentially, though, he's setting this up for, you know, 2016, when the cards are dealt once again, and presumably it's Hillary, but, you know, not known yet for a fact, running, and she can take these issues that he set out, and the Republican opposition to those issues, particularly when it comes to the middle class, and she can run with the ball. On the other hand, the Republicans were really focused on, you know, the size of government generally, and then Obama's response to ISIS and the fact that he didn't say Al Qaeda for the first time since 9/11. I'm not really sure what the significance is. He talked about terrorism, and you know, terrorists now are made up of many different organizations, as Al-Qaeda is split into, you know, 2, 3, 4 different organizations. So I'm not sure what the significance of not saying that is, but he did have some strong words against terrorism. Obviously, a lot of work to do on that front. And in some cases, the Republicans have some very good points in terms of what needs to be done. But just making general comments that, you know, he didn't bring up Al-Qaeda isn't going to help matters. It just befuddles the issue and shows that the Republicans aren't focused on national security either. They're focused on sort of the gotcha aspects of it, and it doesn't help our national security. So that's just kind of a very, very silly approach to the response for the State of the Union. I actually have a couple good ideas of what we can do with the terrorists who are in Gitmo right now, if in fact it does ever get closed, which I will share with you. But we've got to take our last break, so stick around, and we'll talk about that.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Museums are great places to work and wonderful places to visit. But are they essential? How can we improve our museum practice so that museums remain vital and essential players in society? Listen for Museum Life with host Carol Bossert, where each week we'll discuss timely and topical issues of concern to the museum community. Museum Life can be heard live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Join Dr. Linda Iniguez every week for the Shrink Wrap Forum. This show discusses topics that you wouldn't normally hear in today's media. In the forum, virtually no topic is off limits. We invite you to join us and participate or dive into the stream where we value independent thought, talk to those people that are making a difference, and explore ideas considered outside the box. The Shrink Wrap Forum can be heard live every Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
In the spirit of Have Couch, Will Travel, Dr. Carol Lieberman creates a haven of sanity in an increasingly insane world. Each day we are bombarded with news of events that have never crossed our wildest nightmares. Society is spiraling out of control and everyone is reeling from it. But now there's an answer. The best way to keep sane in this insane world is to tune in to Dr. Carol's Couch on Voice America. Dr. Carol, a certified media psychiatrist, will broadcast live from her Beverly Hills office every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Call or log in and get help with whatever is sending you reeling whenever you need a soothing voice to calm and advise you. That's Dr. Carol's Couch every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Between the Synapse with your host, Mark Tobin. If you want in on this week's discussion, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to mbt@betweenthesynapse.com or on Twitter at BetweenTSynapse. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back to Between the Synapse. We are talking about the State of the Union. By the way, and during the break, I was just poking through Facebook, and I don't know if this is the most annoying post that I see, but it's certainly up there. It's the videos where, you know, there's an introduction, and in this case, it's somebody with a can of tuna and some sort of pointing implement, and it says, he punches a hole in the top of a tuna can. What he does next? Question mark. Brilliant. And then you're supposed to click on it, and it'll show you whatever. And in almost all cases, I don't even click on these anymore, it is never brilliant. It's usually kind of mundane and ridiculous. And please, whoever makes these, just stop doing this. Or at least come up with like categories beyond brilliant, because not everything is brilliant. Like, you know, maybe some things would be, you know, brilliant, and the other things would be like smart, or you know, decent, or interesting, or even like stupid, or idiotic, or I don't know. Just because not everything can be brilliant, and then maybe I'd click to find out, but. You know, you kind of lost me, because you just can't label everything as brilliant. But this is actually, I think this is brilliant, my idea here for what to do with the terrorists in Gitmo. You know, I've been talking, you know, D.C.'s been talking about closing the prison in Guantanamo Bay for, you know, at least for 6 years during the Obama administration. It just hasn't happened. And you know, I think the biggest issue is, what do you do with the terrorists who are there? You know, it seems that, you know, when you put them back in the world, it's not like they've been reformed, and they go on and, you know, get a job at Walmart, and you know, end up being taxpaying citizens somewhere. They usually go back to the world of from which they came, and, you know, try to kill us again. And so that's a problem. And you know, we don't, you know, I haven't really seen a viable solution to what do you do with them. So here's my, I have two ideas, and they're kind of similar. You know, if you want, we can vote. But, you know, so if we close Gitmo, so what do we do with the terrorists? So the first is, you know, we put them on a Malaysian Airlines flight, and then it's not our deal anymore. You know, I mean, their chances of survival, you know. So, and then the second is, you know, we put them on a Carnival cruise line with a norovirus, and there, then, you know, it's Carnival's issue. So, those are the two ideas. Now, the Republicans will vote for it because it's privatizing the solution. You know, we let, you know, corporations handle the issue. The government is out of it, so it's smaller government, and you know, we close. We can bring those guys back from Cuba, you know, from the part of Cuba, and you know, we're done with it, and it's you know, all on Carnival, and we're, you know, yeah, I guess we have to pay Malaysian Airlines and Carnival, so we're creating jobs, and so it's a win-win for everybody. So I think, I don't know what you guys think. You can let me know. Send me a tweet at Between T Synapse or an email at mbt at betweenthesynapse.com and let me know if you favor either one of those or both. Or, you know, look, there are enough there that we could do both. But I think this is, you know, I know that everybody wants to find something that's bipartisan, that everyone, you know, that we can, you know, kind of do like get government working again. And this, I think, this is it. I think this is something that both parties can do, and they can both claim victory and can go to their bases and say, look, you know, Democrats can say, look, we finally closed Gitmo. And the Republicans can say, you know, we got rid of the terrorists for good, and we made government smaller. We created jobs in the private industry and so on. So, you know, I don't know. I think it's brilliant. Well, I don't know about you. So think about that for a little while. Let me know. So you got two things. You got some homework. You got to let me know about, you know, what do we do with the terrorists? Malaysian Airlines, Carnival Cruise, norovirus, one or both. And then about the names, Deflate Dome, Deflate Ring. There you got to choose. You really can't use both because then it becomes confusing. So you got to stick with one. I don't really care so much, but I kind of lean towards Deflate Dome. It just sounds a little bit better. But yeah, you know what? I could go with either. So you know, let me know about those two things. So today is my wife's birthday. I won't say her age. Not that I don't think she really cares. It's just not something you're supposed to do publicly. But anyway, so happy birthday to her. I'm going to be making dinner for the family tonight. And I don't want to say because it's supposed to be a surprise. But, you know, one of the things my wife really likes is a wedge salad. And we've had this discussion many times because I find the wedge salad to be the silliest, most ridiculous thing that restaurants serve. I mean, basically, it is a quarter piece of, you know, a head of lettuce. All they do is they cut a head of lettuce, and they give you a quarter of it, and they stick it on a plate, and then they drizzle some dressing on it, and then, yeah, maybe they throw some blue cheese or whatever, you know, over on the side, and then they put it on a plate, and then you're supposed to spend, like, the next 10 minutes, like, cutting it up and mixing everything up, and when I go to a restaurant, I'm like, that's your job. If I wanted to do that, I would stay at home and I would make the salad. I would cut everything up and mix everything up. You know, and the wedge salad basically dates back to like the 20s or 30s or something. And I actually looked this up and it was, you know, they had to give something green when they were like, you know, throwing slabs of meat on the plate. And they're like, okay, here, you know, have a chunk of salad or of lettuce. And you know, it was kind of before the 70s started to create salads and the entree salad and all those kinds of things. Kind of, you know, imagination took over with the advent of salads. So there's really no reason for it now. I don't know the attraction to the wedge salad, and I also have never really understood the attraction to kind of do-it-yourself restaurants where, you know, you have to do work. What is the point of going out to eat if you have to do the work? You know, I mean, one time, you know, this is a Texas kind of thing, but, you know, it was like a do-it-yourself barbecue. You pick the meat, you season it, you pick the wood, you know, you go to the smoker, you know, you add wood, you sauce it. The problem was, you know, after 12 hours, you know, you had some really great barbecue, and so I was really proud of it. So, you know, I take the platter, you know, into the restaurant to serve my family. I find out that they had left 11 hours earlier, and so that was, you know, it just didn't work. So that's why this whole do-it-yourself stuff, you know, just makes me crazy. And, you know, it starts with this wedge salad. Just, you know, boycott it. Don't order it. And maybe restaurants will realize that they actually have to create something and not just cut off a chunk of a head of iceberg lettuce. That is not, you know. And by the way, and charge you like $8 for it, you know, for cutting something and then like drizzling stuff. That's just not, you know, whatever. Anyway, so happy birthday to my wife. And that's going to be it for today. I want to thank the Voice of America team, my producer, Winston Price. Thank my engineer, Kevin. Download the podcast for this and future shows at BetweenTheSynapse.com under the BTS Radio as well as on Voice America. Check me out on Facebook and Twitter. And thanks for listening. Join me next week as well. Take care. Have a good day.
Thanks again for joining us this week. Mark Tobin and Between the Synapse will transmit once again next Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. And remember, you never know what lies between the synapse.